This podcast is supported by the growing community of artists and art lovers through the Gently Does It Patreon page. Go to patreon.com/ John Dalton Gently Does It to join the conversation. I'm very happy to be talking to Tamara Muller today in Holland. Tamara is an artist. She paints evocative paintings of childlike figures that are sort of realistic and sort of not, and they all have Tamara's face. Her work is much sought after and it's collected internationally. So hello, Tamara. It's very nice to be talking to you.
Thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome. It's my pleasure. I didn't know you had a connection with Ireland until we made contact and we were sort of getting ready for our chat today. But both your parents moved to Ireland in the early 90s, is that right?
Yeah. They bought a house in Kilmeaden in County Waterford in 1992. And they moved a year after they bought it because there had to be a lot done at the house. And they moved because I was going to study at the Art Academy, so moved out, and my brother moved out. And, you know, they could do what they want, so they went on this big adventure.
What made them choose Ireland? Because, like, your dad is known for his erotic art, and I wouldn't have thought that Ireland was the most welcoming of places for erotic artists in the early 90s. I mean, it's probably changed now, but...
Yeah, well, I don't think they moved there to exhibit the art in there, but just to find a place where they could work really well. And the house they bought, there was this, it was a former woolen mill factory, and there was this big building in the garden, and they could make their studios in and work. And that was, I think, the most important thing for them, to have this quiet place to work and create this huge garden, because there was nothing there, but they wanted to make this great garden. So that were all reasons to go somewhere else, to be able to do all that. And for them, it wasn't difficult to ship the work to the Netherlands and exhibit there. So, yeah, that's why they went there. They just fell in love with the place when they saw it.
Oh, okay. Did they look at other countries before choosing
Ireland?
Yeah,
they did. But if they hadn't found that place, maybe they would have, you know, moved to another country. But they just had a look in Ireland and they just fell in love with the house they saw there. So
yeah. I know the tax benefits in Ireland were way better back then. I think it was completely tax free for artists back then. It's changed now, but
I think it's I thought it was still very good, but that may have that didn't stop them, I think.
Yeah, no, it used to be your whole anything you made was tax-free. I had a friend who was a scriptwriter who did well, because it was the same for writers as well, quite a few of the arts. Then I think it was the first €75,000 you made, that was tax-free. I think it's down to 50 now.
Okay.
And where are they located? That's just up the road from where Gottfried Helnwein is in Tipperary.
Yeah, I think it's near there. They live near the Cork Road from Waterford to Cork.
Yeah, they're not far.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Of course, he moved afterwards, so, you know, your parents can kind of claim, you know, we found it first.
But there was a lot of interesting artists living in Ireland, I think.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much.
Yeah, you too. I think my mother met him after my father died in 2000, and after that, the whole garden was getting more finished, and she gave summer concerts in the concerts in the garden, and one of the musicians she invited was a friend of Gottfried Helnwein, and I think she met him twice, or with the musician she got friends with. But I never met him or his family.
Okay, all right. So there wasn't.
Unfortunately, because I would have thought it would be very interesting to have a look at his place.
yeah, lovely castle. And a big restoration as well.
Yeah, and beautiful studio, I think.
yeah. I think there's a few studios around the house, but yeah, lovely.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a question from Instagram. This one's from artist Julian Davis, and he asks, your paintings seem to tie together past aspects of painting from Holland and the Netherlands with more modern artists, kind of like Bruegel meets Alice Neal. Who are your past and present influences?
Well, I see what he means. Yeah, it's exactly what he says. I have this very big interest in painting. In the past, of course, the work of my father was the first influence, I think. The way he painted was also a little bit, you know, old in all these layers, and it was like an old technique. But when I was 14 or so, I saw a sketch from Egon Schiele in an exhibition in London, and I really liked it. And then I got really into Egon Schiele.
Yeah.
And I also found out that that was a big difference with my parents at work and what I liked. I liked these facial expressions and all this emotion, and I didn't find that in the work of my parents. So then I think I went my own way and found out more about other art, you know, that there was more than the magical realism of my parents. And when I went to the art academy in The Hague, where I studied graphic design, I found out more about, you know, Francis Bacon and Marlene Dumas from the Netherlands. And then I also got influenced by photographers and filmmakers and performance artists like Cindy Sherman. And I very much like the work of Lars von Trier, the filmmaker, and also work like from Paul McCarthy, not the singer, but the performance guy, I really liked. So all that crept into my feeling of what I wanted to do. And I have to say it's the whole together, of course. So there's not one I particularly, you know, I'm really into. It's all this big pile of things together I like. So from Gerard Richter to Balthus to more modern painters all over the world. I also like very much a Dutch artist called Pat Andrea. And there's this Dutch young painter, Helen Verhoeven, I like. And but I also like Goya or Balthus or Rothko, or, you know, it's just this, you know.
Yeah,
there's this South Korean guy who exhibits in my gallery, or in the gallery where I exhibit too, in Amsterdam. It's Galerie Bart. And this artist, Yisan Am, he's from South Korea. And I really like the way he paints, but I also like what he paints. It's really, it's political, but it's also very poetic. And I like it when it's both, when an artist both paints very well, and I really like the painting, but I also like what is painted, because that is a difficult combination to find sometimes.
How do you spell his name?
J-I-S-A-N and then A-H-N.
Great. I know that you did some performance art and some video art earlier on, but I couldn't find any examples of it. What was it like?
Well, there are some video stills at my Facebook page in my work album. So there you can see some of it. But it was, what was it like? I was performing in all of the videos and the performances, and it was set up a bit like my paintings. I look at the viewer into the camera most of the time, or I do something in the performances. I use the public in the performance, so I got people in the performance. I invited them to work with me, and I can just describe one for you. My first video was me with an orange wig on the ground, looking up into the camera, and I had this dead crow in my arms, and while looking into the camera, I was plucking all the feathers out of it, which takes some strength, so I had to really pull hard, it's like a loop, so it goes on forever. You see me plucking, and then it starts over again after a while, because it would take hours, of course, to pluck the whole bird.
What was that called?
Enfant terrible.
Okay.
And I also did another video. When I did the performances and the videos, I was doing this Master of Fine Arts degree later on, when I was painting already for years. And we went for a trip to Tokyo with the whole program. And then I made this video where I pulled my eyelids up with rubber bands under a wig, so I look like a Japanese girl with a black wig on, and then I look in the camera, and then you see all these things happen to my face. I get hit. I'm getting hit, and someone smears ketchup in my face, and there's all this flour thrown at me, you know, a baking flour.
Yeah.
And I keep smiling all the time, and they put raw fish in my mouth. But you just see my face. It sounds very ugly, but this looks very beautiful when it's all happening, and I keep smiling. And you hear this voiceover of a grim fairy tale, and it's called The Girl Without Hands. And in the fairy tale, a girl lets her hands chop off because of her father. He makes this pact with the devil, and you know it's a cruel story.
Yeah.
So I think some of the work I did with the video and the performance was about boundaries people have for themselves, so what they do and let other people do to them, and
yeah,
you know how they react to it.
Yeah,
that was what I was doing then. And in the performances, I also ask people to work with me in the performance, and then I was making it uneasy for them to be in it. So, and then I was just wondering when they would just walk away, but they didn't. So,
I know you tried a number of different forms of artistic expression before you settled on painting, like we were just talking about with the performance art. Do you know what it is about painting that made you choose it above the rest?
Well, actually, it's the only medium I feel very secure about myself. And it's just so evident that I'm a painter. I don't know. It's just maybe it's because I have been an insecure human being, and that's just the only thing I'm not insecure about. It's just I feel so confident about painting, and I have been all my life. So it's just the most natural thing to do for me or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the biggest reason was also the reason why I didn't start painting, because it was so normal for me and so evident that I was a painter or something like that, that I didn't think of it as something I wanted to do, you know, when I was going to study. I thought, oh yeah, I know painting, you know,
yeah.
I'm going to do something else. Of course, I didn't know painting at all, but I thought I knew about it. And I just wanted to do all these other things I like and I knew almost nothing about. So I wanted to do photography and illustration and know more about letters and, you know, and all that, and film. And in the study graphic design, there was all these subjects I could do, and also painting. So I thought, okay, I can do all. But then I found out after that I didn't want to become a graphic designer at all. And I just wanted to paint. And then, so I just got into that, and everything went really well. I was painting, and my career as a painter began just very easily, and I liked it. But in my personal life, things weren't so going so great. So I think I was a little bit depressed, and I had developed this social phobia, and I didn't get out much. And I felt, and it came to a point that I thought, well, I really should do something about this. So then I found help, but I also got this feeling that I really needed to break free or do something I really, really wanted. And then I started this acting course for 3 years, and that really set me free. So, and I really liked that too. So really everything I did, painting was always there, and I just did all these other things because I felt also the need to do these other things. But then something happens in my life, and then I have to choose, and whenever I have to choose, I choose painting. So it's just the thing I'm most confident about, and I feel is the most me or something like that.
Yeah.
And I would have gone further with the video and the performance if I didn't had children, because then I came to a point I wanted to have a child, and you know, there's only so much things you can do in a day. So then I chose to focus on painting. But maybe in future I will do something with the video and the film thing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So how does the idea for a painting start for you?
Well, there's most of the time there's something going on in my life or around me, and I'm focused on that, and I just read about it, and then I think, and I feel that I want to do something with it, and then I read about it, and I collect everything I think connects to it from the outer world, so like literature or whatever. I seek for connections, and I collect images, and then I look at how I can combine these ingredients to an image that is not only personal but also has got something to do with the world or something like that.
Right. And with, like, I mean, everybody's got things going on in their lives, but yeah. How does it come to a fine point of, I think I'm going to make a painting about this particular thing? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It has got to do with very personal stuff that is going on. So the thing on the foreground, you know, there's always things going on and they come back in your life. And,
yeah.
You know, the same problems tend to, you know, come back again or whatever, or maybe not. But there are always a few themes that always come back. But there's always something else, something new or something as a person you develop. So things change, and there's also always something new in that's really playing the most important role at that moment.
And, yeah.
And that in combination with some things I just absorb somewhere, you know, I feel there's just like this, oh, this is a coincidence. You know, then I feel something is happening, and then I think, yeah, this is it. This is still open enough to do something with. You know, I don't want to put one clear thing on the canvas. It's just there should be going on something else, some more.
Yeah. Do you mean like more space in the whole idea? There's more space for other people to see other things in?
Yeah, I always try to make a very ambivalent image. You know, it is somewhere very personal, but it is not in a way.
Yeah.
And I tend to make it. I don't want to tell something. It's more that I want to raise a question or something, or make some confusion that I actually feel myself in the world. You know.
Yeah.
It's not so clear. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you have more than one painting on the go at a time? Like, do you have a series of ideas coming to you?
Yeah. Yeah, I always work in a series. So because that makes it more easy to otherwise it's too much to put in one painting. And it's also practical, because with all the layers that have to dry with oil, it's convenient if you can put one painting aside and then start another. And then,
yeah.
And as a whole, it's also it's more interesting to make them as a series. I don't know. It helps. It helps to finish every painting.
Yeah. And how do you record your ideas as you're going along? Do you make little thumbnail sketches? And I know you're saying about you gather this kind of collage of influences, but the actual idea for the picture, do you mm-hmm. write that down, or do you?
Yeah. Yeah, I write down kind of a list of ingredients, and then I make sketches. You know, I have all these ideas I want to use, but it's not always possible to put everything in it. But I don't want to forget something, so I make this list, and then I make sketches. Then I start making photographs or looking in my old photographs and all these images I collect, and then I try to put together some kind of collages and see what happens, and then that's a starting point for a painting.
So. Right. And when you're taking the pictures of your own face, are you just kind of randomly taking them? Are you like with different faces, or do you have an intention? Like, I want to get this particular look, and I want to get that particular look.
Yeah. I have something in mind, but sometimes something happens that I can use too. I am looking for something when I take a picture. But later on, when I combine it with a body from a magazine or something, then sometimes something else happens, and then I see it, and then of course I use it if something, you know, comes up. Yeah.
I thought that because I thought one of the things that's very interesting about your paintings is the it's like you've got the perfect model. Because I hadn't really noticed this until I was looking at your paintings, but then when I looked at other people's paintings who use models, you know, who like have them come in and pay them, there is a little bit of a disconnect because the artist says something they've got in their mind and they're saying to the model, they're trying to convey it, you know, in mm-hmm. words, can you look this way or be sad or whatever it is, I don't know. Whereas with yours, because you've had acting training as well,
yeah.
So it's like the perfect kind of seamless yeah. tool because your model knows exactly what you as a painter want.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly how I feel about it too. I think you see that very, very good. That's nice to hear that that you see it like that because that's what I'm trying to do. Yeah.
Okay, good. And with the collages you were talking about, you don't do those on Photoshop or anything. You actually cut and paste them down, do you?
Yeah. First of all, I like what the things that just happen. You know, the pieces of paper just falling down, or the, you know, stain getting on them, or you know, there's, and in Photoshop it gets a little slick or something. I think I recognize it sometimes in a painting, and I don't think not in my painting, but in the paintings of people who use Photoshop, and I think that's not good if I can see they use it. You know.
Yeah.
It feels like, oh yeah, that's that filter you're using now or something. Yeah. No, I don't like it to use it.
Right. Yeah. You like the physicality of cutting out things and sticking them down with glue and.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And do you ever use models for the body parts or the body positions?
You mean
for the figures or the body of your figures?
Except from the magazine pictures. You mean real
yeah.
model?
Yeah.
No, I always make pictures. So sometimes I need some kind of body or some kind of hand, or you know, I miss something, and then I make a picture of my my own hand or my children's hand or whatever. But I never use live models.
No. Okay, all right. Yeah. And do you do color studies before you start?
No, I do everything in the painting.
Okay. Yeah. And do you still begin your paintings with acrylic and then switch to oils? Or have you moved on from that?
Yeah, a little. I moved on a little because I have done that really for years. But last year I made some just oil paints. Just I started in oil and nothing else. And now I'm doing some series in acrylic. So, no, maybe I'm not sure if I'm going back to it.
And why do you do that? What's the benefit or what's the reason for doing the acrylics and then switching to oil?
Well, I just started that way because I thought when I was very young I just started that because I saw my father doing something like it, not really like it, but yeah, he started out in some, he did this grisailles on with alkyd or acrylic before he started on with oil. So I thought, oh yeah, you just start with acrylic and then you go on with oil. And I never had really, you know, a lot of painting. I did have some painting lessons, but not about, you know, building up a painting or whatever.
Right.
So I just did it like that. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. That's what you do. Yeah.
Yeah. But I did benefit because I started in this very bright color scheme. In, you know, I really started off very wild with the acrylics. And then it tends to shine through the oil a bit. So then you get this very deep flesh color. If you paint over it in oil, it shines through a bit.
Yeah. And do you have a particular medium that you like to use?
No, not really. Just all very basic stuff.
Right. Okay. And do you have a particular way of checking yourself as you're working? You know, like some artists like to turn the canvas upside down, or they're jumping back and forth, or mirrors. Or do you have a particular way you like to check yourself?
Yeah, the thing I do most is, of course, walk back and or just sit down and from a distance and look. But sometimes I make pictures with my mobile phone. But I found that a bit scary too, because then when I look at it and a few days later I look at it and then I see what I've done, then sometimes I think it's very scary, because then I think, oh my God, what have I done? You know, if you look back, it's better not to look back. So if I do that, I erase the painting too, because I get nervous when I, you know, after 2 weeks and I look back and think, oh my God, I totally ruined it or something. But I do that sometimes. And I also, sometimes it helps too when the painting is very, when it's almost finished and I ask someone to look at it, you know, just anyone, or maybe a friend, an artist or I know, and I send a picture or whatever. And then it's not so much about what they say then, but when it's a little less safe, or, you know, when somebody looks at it, and then I tend to look at it differently too. So I'm getting very critical, and then I see more. It's when I show it to somebody already. So when it's not even, but I don't do that all the time, because sometimes the painting is not far enough to do that. But,
okay.
But that helps sometimes too. I get this real different view, or I don't know how it works, but.
Yeah, right. It sounds like it's like a psychological tool. It sort of triggers your discernment, goes up a couple of notches.
Yeah,
that's good. Yeah. And do you have a favorite tool or medium or piece of equipment in your studio that you really love? And
well, there are a few things. I use paper tape. I like to use that to make these collage-achtige, that's Dutch, sorry. I use this paper tape to make these sharp edges, so it looks like there's some photograph or something cut out on the painting itself, but it's actually just paint. And so I use that tape so I can get it off.
So you use the tape to create these really sharp lines, the masking tape, is it?
Oh,
okay.
That's quite common, I think, but I like it. And when I work in oil, I found out I could buy these oil bars. Do you know them?
I think I do, but not. Oh, yeah. Tell me a bit more about them.
It's oil paint compressed into a kind of pastel a crayon. And I like that, because sometimes I want to have this feeling as if the painting is actually a part of a drawing. So I like to, you know, undermine the fact that it's a painting or something. So then it's nice to just be able to draw with paint, you know. So that's
Right. So they're oil pastels, are they?
No, it's really oil paint. So they are called oil bars. It's not real pastel.
They're different from oil pastels again.
But now I'm working in acrylic, so I haven't found anything for that in acrylic, but let's see, is there something else? And I like to use the broad brush if something isn't working or something. I just pull over this big brush, and then something nice happens sometimes, so then, you know. And I like that, to make some kind of, you know, that you don't know what happens completely. I like that.
Okay. I saw quite a few references to your training in graphic design. You think you mentioned it yourself. And, you know, in these references, they're always gone on about how it's evident in your work, your graphic design training. I didn't really see that myself. Do you think that that's a valid kind of point?
I read that too, but well, in a way, not really, but the only thing I can imagine what they mean is that I try to show in my painting that it is not an image to look at, but it's also just a flat 2D, two-dimensional painting. Do you understand what I mean?
I think I do, but can you explain it a bit more?
Yeah, so I... on one hand, I tried, there's this very direct communication between this figure on my painting, like a realistic person looking at you. And on the other hand, I undermined it by making it very two-dimensional, showing the paint and making it unfinished. And so when you look at a graphic design, it's of course also meant to communicate with you, but it's very clear that it's not, you know, a picture just to look at or something right. like that, you know?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Maybe that's the only thing, the two-dimensional part of the...
I think what you're talking about is very interesting. I think looking at your work, though, and the way they're sort of saying, oh, yeah, you can see the graphic design training coming out. I think they're missing the point for me.
Yeah,
for me.
Yeah, that's not.
With what you were saying and the way you were saying, like you paint a very kind of representational, some parts of it, like the face and that kind of thing. And then there's the very graphic, or you want to undermine that. Why do you want to undermine it?
Because I want to get into the head of the viewer. So if they have the feeling they can just watch an image safely, you know, on the other side of the canvas and just watch and look at a nice image, that's not what I want. I want to make them aware that they are actually looking at something and that the half of the painting is happening in their head and they should be aware of it, something like that.
I think you achieved that, definitely, yeah. Because I know for myself, it's almost like refocusing your eyes, except you're refocusing your brain. Because on the one hand, this is just for me anyway, I'm kind of looking at it and I get pulled in. And then I think probably the way my eyes travel, you'll hit off a bit of the painting and it'll be basically going, this is not a real thing. This is a flat thing. Mm-hmm. And all the stuff you just thought 2 seconds ago, that's just your projection.
Yeah.
That's kind of what goes on in my head. Which, it sort of messes with my brain a bit, which in a good way.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm trying to do. So good that it works.
Yay! Okay. As I said earlier on, both your parents were artists. Did they encourage you to go into art?
Well, they let me completely free, whatever, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, they didn't discourage me. They didn't warn me. They didn't say, yeah, you should do it. It's the best thing to do in your life. No, I don't know. They just, you know, let me decide myself.
But you've got a brother and a sister, and they weren't artists. Like, it was just you that became a painter. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, so it's, yeah. Because the reason I ask is, when I was growing up, there was very little art in my environment. So when I saw that your parents were artists, I immediately started to fantasize about how brilliant it would be to be raised by artists and surrounded by art, as I was growing up. But that's just like my little fantasy. Like, was it brilliant for you?
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah, it was, in one way, of course, it was all normal to me. But, you know, when I look back, it was great because there was all this material I could use and I got from my father, and, you know, like ink and you know, the stuff you don't find in every house, you know, and paint. And that was nice. But my parents also threw these weird, or not weird, but they every year they threw a big party in there. All these weird people came in, and, you know, all these so different. They were all so different, these people, you know, from the... part of it was artists, and then there were these barriers of art that became friends, and it was very very broad group of people, and we were just, you know, being invisible, hanging around and looking at everything, and that was great, and seeing all these wild things happen, you know, it not too wild, but you know. It was a little special and exciting. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So my fantasy was kind of right.
Yeah.
But
I have to say, it was also very clear to me that it was also just hard work, you know, every day. It was not something you do on a Sunday when you have inspiration or something.
Yeah, there's a famous, I think it's Chuck Close quote, where he says, inspiration is for amateurs. professionals show up for work.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. As I was saying earlier, your father, Woot Muller, he was known for his erotic art. Now, looking at it nowadays, it doesn't seem like that erotic, but there's been quite a bit written about how being around his art, and particularly all the kind of reference material and the nudity, that traumatized you as a child. How is that for you now with your own children, with your own work?
Well, I think traumatized is a little... is a big word. I don't think it traumatized me, but it was confusing. I liked the art, and the art was totally okay. It was hanging on the wall, and we were used to it, and I loved the paintings of my father. It was more the way people reacted to it that confused me. Like, I was living in this small village, and I kind of found out that the normal people in the village, you know, and my friends thought it was a bit odd, you know, that house with all the news in it and the artists. And I felt a little bit, you know, that there should be something, you should be ashamed of it or something. But I completely was at ease with the paintings, you know. I found them very beautiful. And later on, when I was a little bit older, you know, when I was a teenager, then of course, the whole sexual thing is more difficult, you know. And then when my parents weren't very free and, you know, about it, and then I did see all these erotic photographs in books and stuff my parents collected, and then I found ashamed of that I was looking at it, and, you know, I was just embarrassed by the whole, and it was just... it confused me, because on one hand there was this openness, all this open, this normal thing in the paintings, and that was all, you know, normal, and there was this in real life, there was so much taboo about it, you know, so that was difficult. But now with my kids, I you know, it's not the art itself, I think, that's causing any trouble or something. You can talk about it, and you can explain some things, and then if you're open and just open in real life about things, I don't see that there will be any, you know, difficulties or
right
whatever.
Right. Okay, so if I understand what you're saying, it wasn't so much the content, it was the disparity between your parents and the content. Like, your parents weren't flouncing around the house naked or mm-hmm. being very, you know, open about sexuality or anything like that. But
no,
they had this almost closeted kind of stuff going on bookshelves and reference material. And that's what kind of led you to sort of feel that shame. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And they especially didn't communicate with the children about it, you know, in their life. It wasn't like that. But for me, as a child within this household, it was weird.
Okay.
And I don't think I saw my father ever in his bare ass. Yeah. And my mother was a little bit more free, but it was not so, you know, it was just so very, yeah. That was just two different things.
I'm just trying to remember if I ever saw my father. I don't think I did either. So it's all right.
Yeah. But I saw all these books with more pornographic, you know, there was this all this photography in the house also, you know, we had a lot of books. And of course I looked secretly. And then, and I felt ashamed, and in a way not. And I found it, I don't know.
That'll do your head in. That'll do your head in for sure. Because, like, if your dad had been a banker or something like that, that just wouldn't have been an issue, you know. Or maybe it would, actually. Well, anyway. Depends on what he had in the bookcase, I suppose.
Yeah.
So with your own kids, are you, like, hypersensitive about it, about how they, or are you just, is it become normal for you because, you know, they've been around it their whole lives?
Yeah, it's normal, and I don't see very, you know, they're quite frank, you know, when they look at my paintings and say what they like, and that's nice too, you know. They just say I don't like this bit, or I only like the eyes. You know, it's nice if they, you know, they don't feel they have to hold back anything or something. That's nice. No, I don't. And I don't think they see the weird stuff in it yet, probably. But if they ask me anything, I will try to explain or, you know.
Yeah. Speaking of kids, there was a 2013 interview with a Dutch magazine called Elegance. You said that children are far from innocent. It was a long interview. It was a very good interview, but that sentence just really stood out for me. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, I don't think children are more innocent than well, you say it's grown-up people.
Adults, yeah.
Yeah, adults, yeah. It's not that they're evil, but it's just they just you know, they're not, they're maybe truthful and pure or whatever, but they're not innocent. In a way they're innocent, but they're so much different than adults, in a way, if you understand.
Yeah, well, I think like there was a balancing sentence after that where you're basically saying children are not as innocent as they're not innocent, and adults are not as invulnerable and together, you know. So
I think it refers to something I felt as a child, that when I was little, I still remember that I thought, I'm not so little as you think, you know. I understood things, and I, of course, I, in a childlike way, and of course there is innocence. But sometimes people look at children and, oh, look at the children. They're so sweet and so, there's much more going on. That's something that's what I mean. They're naive and have to learn stuff. But there's so much going on in their heads and in their, and they feel so many, yeah. I don't see them as one-dimensional persons.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, I think I get it. If I understand what you're saying, it's kind of like when people say children are innocent, they stop there. And when you do that, you stop seeing the person with all the things that's going on for them as a person. Everybody's got lots of things going on for them. When you do that and you say, oh, they're innocent.
Yeah, you're right. And also they want to be taken seriously, you know. It's like they, of course, they don't know everything and they have to learn and they're naive in a way. But still, they are much the same as adults. That is something I really feel. And that's what I meant with that innocent remark.
I think that's dead right. I think adults idealize children in some way because they want to kind of think that childhood is innocent.
Yes, and there's also this part of children that they have to learn to canalize their emotions. So they can be very aggressive and angry and all that. So it's not that they're always sweet or something, you know.
Yeah.
That's also maybe what I meant. They're quite, you know, quite like little animals, you know. Yeah. Sometimes, yeah. And that's what I like about them too, you know.
That they've got the complexity of adults, yeah. But just in a different version, I suppose.
Yeah, but also what connects to that remark about innocence is that as an adult myself, that's quite personal, I don't know if everybody feels that way, but I have now maybe not as much as 10 years ago, but I could feel like really like a child at so many times in my life that I thought, oh my God, I feel like I'm, you know, 12 years old and I was maybe 28 or something, you know?
Yeah.
So that weird dualistic, you know, these things as an adult, you can feel like a child, and as a child, you can feel like, you know, I'm not as different as an adult. And then these different parts, that's also something I put in the paintings.
Particularly if you come up against a really ignorant adult when you're a child. And then you somewhere in you, as I can remember this, like as a child, you're going, I think I am more mature than that adult, but you know, how could I be thinking that because I'm only a kid? You know, I mean, hindsight, you look back and go, yeah, you probably were. But, I can remember that kind of confusion of feeling like, yeah, I'm the grown up here.
Yeah.
I think as well that exactly what you're talking about really comes across in your paintings, and I think it's one of the things that triggers people when they're looking at them, because there is similarly to what I was saying about, you know, going back and forth mentally, there's a thing, there's part of the overall impression of the content, you know, of the picture is, oh, this is about children. But then when you look at the face, it's like, oh, hang on, that's an adult. And oh, is it a child? Is it an adult? What's going on here? I feel weird.
That's good.
If you're enjoying this podcast, remember you can support it by going to patreon.com/John Dalton gently does it. There's a certain kind of stripped down quality to your work, like a mark could be made only for as long as it serves a purpose in the painting and no more than that. And it's kind of the same with the faces. Like, there's a lot of talk about why you use only your own face on all the figures and what does it mean? And but like, as I was looking at them, for me, it was more of a sense of you as the artist saying, well, what do I need other people's faces for? I'm doing something else here. And now what that something else is you're doing is where the art is. That's where the magic is, if you like. And it's like you know that and you don't waste your time on anything but the magic or the art of the painting. I'm getting to a question here now. Hang on. And I wondered if that kind of stripped downness comes from your early exposure to art that we were talking about, art and art making. Like, art and art making were so familiar to you that you go straight to the core of art making with your paintings.
Well, it's very nice to hear that you put into words what I'm trying to do. That's it exactly. I always wanted to use the painting to have this very direct contact with the viewer, and I find it very difficult to put into words, so you do it better. But that's the only thing I can say, really, that it's that I feel that what you said about it is very correct.
Right. Well, I suppose where my question is coming from was, like, it takes a huge amount of confidence, I think, to know what you're doing. To that level, to the level that you know what you're doing, whether you know consciously or not, because you've thrown out a lot. Like, you don't waste any time on stuff, and the economy in your paintings is pretty breathtaking as well. Meaning, like, if I was painting a leg or something, right, I'd be agonizing about, now should I paint it more or should I paint it less? Is it enough? Whereas, and maybe you do this, but it, like, for, you know. When you stop, like, on something like a leg or a horse or whatever, it's like looking at it, you go, well, that's brilliant. Of course, that's the point that you stop at. But if it was me, I'd be I'd be in bits trying to figure out if that is the right place to stop. And what made me wonder about it was if all that exposure to art when you were a kid, it just kind of absorbed into you. So your intuition is very heightened for that moment of, no, that's enough, and on to the next thing, or, you know, don't overdo it, kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, well, it's, for me, it's a struggle to do what you say. For me, it is too. So
okay.
And when I started painting, I did loads of paintings that I think are far painted, you know, in detail and very illustrative, Although I was happy with the paintings then, I also felt every time after I done the series or the exhibition, and I thought, this is not the painting I want to do, but I couldn't do it in another way. So it took me a long way to let go of all this precise and this completely closed paintings in a way.
Yeah.
But I first had to make a lot of those before I could let it go. And then I think it was in 2007.
Okay.
I just thought, well, you know, fuck it. I made some really empty paintings then. So I thought, okay, I just do it. I just stop, you know. And now I think maybe that was a bit over the top. Maybe not. But, you know, it was interesting. But now I'm into more fuller and more paint and more. I'm now going in a different direction again. But first, So it was a struggle to do that, and I still am struggling with it, to do it the way it feels completely right. But I remember in 2007 that I was very happy to let go of a lot of, and then I found out, you know, there are no rules, and I'm going to make my own rules. With this,
Yeah, no, there's nothing, sometimes there's nothing more liberating than saying fuck it.
Yeah.
There's a guy in Italy, he's got a whole therapy called fuck it therapy.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Maybe because I saw so many things when I was, you know, younger.
Yeah.
That I was not so much interested in making just an image.
Yeah.
But I wanted to, you know, I wanted to do something more with it. But I think it took a lot of time for me to understand that myself, that that was what I was, you know, trying to do.
Yeah.
You know? I think I tried to do that more intuitive when I was younger.
Yeah.
And then when I started out, I didn't even use my own face all the time. And then when I started out, I did want to have this connection with the viewer. You know, I didn't want to make this an image to look at, but I did want to do the same thing as now in a way. But it was so much about me and my inner world, you know, completely about that. And I wasn't, with the painting, I wasn't able to let go and be really, it was in the beginning, so there, I didn't use my own face, but they were actually self-portraits. And with the paint, I wasn't able to let go enough, you know. It was too... So it gradually developed into a time that I was able to get out of myself and get out in the world. And at the same time, I was able to let go of the... to use the paint more as a... Then I understood what I was doing, and I could let go of all the more illustrative paint and the more closed paintings, and really get into what you just described, really. So that was a process that I wasn't aware of until, I think, 2004 or something.
Okay.
Yeah. It has two sides, as everything in the work, you know. It has two sides. So one is intuitive, and the other part is more that I know exactly where I'm going to stop or what I'm not going to paint or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So it's half and half, half calculated, half intuitive.
Yeah, right.
I think it shows, like, because, like, another thing that really stood out to me in reading different people talking about your work is a lot of them have very different takes on it. Like, some people sort of bound your paintings very sexual, you know, disturbingly erotic paintings capture growing up and innocence lost. That's a quote. And others found them very, very violent. And others talked about power struggles and, you know, and this all kind of left me scratching my head, because while I could see traces of what they were talking about, they're not the first things that stood out to me, and definitely they weren't the strongest. And then it kind of occurred to me that it was an indication of how good your work is, in that each person, there was enough space for each person to put their own story into it, like a bit like looking into a mirror. And I know you've kind of alluded to this, but is that a conscious thing on your part? Are you consciously leaving your paintings open for that purpose?
Yes, I try to put in all kinds of opposites in one place, so that it becomes completely unclear whether somebody is good or wrong, or a woman or a man or a child or an adult. So and when it gets too heavy, if the painting gets too heavy and too dramatic or something, I just throw in a little bit of humor, and then I think, oh yeah, this is better. And then, you know, it's just the way I feel how things are, you know, and that's what I want to communicate. And it's also something, the other thing I want to communicate is that things are not always what they seem. So there's more to it always than just a story or just the first thing you see.
Yeah, just the surface.
Yeah, and that is what I want to communicate sort of with the, and that's why I'm playing this game with the viewer, really, you know, to confuse them the way I'm confused about these things.
Yeah, and, so yeah. Like there's no black and white of anything, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you think about things long enough and you dive into it and try to find out why, you know, people do certain things in certain circumstances. You know, if you dive into it, you will always find explanations or other stories or another view that complicates the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. If I understand what you're saying, or yeah, is that if you're looking at your painting as you're painting it and you start to get the feeling that you know what it is that you're saying in the painting, that's an alarm bell for you, like, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course I play with it a bit too, because there are these images that provoke certain, you know, cliche thoughts, or, and then I play with that too. I use them. And also I use maybe imaginary from, you know, things you already know. So I play with that to make it difficult to read.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So it's like you present an image that people would be familiar with, and mm-hmm. then you sort of go in one direction, and then as soon as you feel like people are starting to decide, oh, this is what this is about, then you'll switch it to a different direction. Is that?
Yeah. 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 Yeah, but the weird thing is now it seems like I'm just want to perform this big trick or something, but underneath this, I feel like I'm telling some truth about something, you know? It's really, do you understand that? It's not just like, oh, it's this game I make. Underneath there is this one thing I'm trying to say, or trying to, more a feeling maybe, or a, yeah. That is very important to me, that I try to, beyond that whole confusion thing and that, oh, what does it mean? And that behind that, there is something else. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I, for me anyway, I get that. Like, I kind of think of it in terms of, like most things in life, like it's the difference between somebody standing in front of me and telling me something, you know, almost with the pointed finger about life. I don't respond well to that. Or somebody standing beside me and we're both looking at life and they're kind of, you know, giving me a friendly nudge going, isn't that funny? Or isn't that ridiculous, or aren't we all a bit silly, or aren't we all a bit whatever, you know? Then yeah. I, you know, it's friendly, there's a friendliness to it, and I certainly get that kind of friendly quality from your work.
Okay. Yeah, but the violence and the sex and the dark parts, you know, that some people see, they are in it, but it's not just that, you know.
Reading the different perspectives on it, or people's perspective, I kind of thought what they'd written was saying a lot more about them than your work, you know?
Yeah, there you're right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, completely, well, not completely, but slightly different direction. You did a series of paintings called Where the Wild Things Are, and I was just wondering if you'd seen Spike Jonze's movie version of the book, it's Morris Sendak, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, Morris Sendak's book, yeah.
I love it, that book. It's one of my favorite children's books, but I did see the movie. First, I didn't want to see it because I read a critique that made me a bit scared to go and watch it because I liked the book so much. And
yeah.
I thought,
yeah, I was a bit the same myself. Yeah,
yeah. So I did. So I waited a long time before I saw it. So now I've seen it on DVD, and yeah, it's just, for me, it's not the book.
But no,
I like the film, but it's not the book.
Yeah,
it's about something else. For me, the hardcore meaning of the book is something else. But I like this interpretation. I like it, but it's something else.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be hard to make the book into a film, I think, and keep it all intact.
Yeah, because it's almost nothing, yeah, the book. To make their 2-hour movie of it, it's almost impossible.
Yeah, it'll be a 5-minute film.
Yeah. And I missed the part in the film where the room becomes the whole world. I found it so intriguing when I was, you know, my whole life actually. We know where the forest grows into the from the room into the world, and it's not in the movie. So that was maybe a little bit disappointing. But I do like all the other movies of Spike Jonze, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love being John Malkovich, and I love Adaptation. They're one of my favorite movies. So,
in that way,
it was a bit disappointing, maybe.
But that's Charlie Kaufman. That's the writer there. They're both written by the same guy. Yeah.
Ah, okay. Then, yeah.
Charlie Kaufman's a genius.
I think. Me too. Yeah, I just love it.
Okay, you've been painting for a good while now. Have you been tempted to change your style at all as you went along? I know it's evolved, but just, you know, like you could look at your work from 10 years ago and I know it's still it was your work, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's more that I'm not able to do it, you know? I wish I could paint, you know, of course I would love to paint far more loose and wild, and you know, it doesn't work, you know. There's only one way I can do it, and that evolved because of course I try to change it, but it's something that has to go naturally or something, or has to grow slowly, or I just can't just change it overnight. So that's why, but I wish I could. Really. Yeah.
Okay. If there's one underlying theme to all your work, what do you think it would be?
Well, that is a difficult question. But if I have to say a few words, I would say shame or guilt or power. But maybe there's something that is covering it all. But I haven't found it out yet. So
okay.
So
that was kind of three.
Yeah.
Shame, probably. Yeah, okay. You've exhibited your work all around the world. Do you notice a difference between one country and the next? For example, do you notice a big difference between the art scene in Europe and the art scene in America?
I don't know really, because I did exhibit work in America, but not so much, and I wasn't there much, so I don't know. I think maybe it's... But that's a very personal, more feeling or about. I have been to New York, and then I thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to exhibit in New York? And then when I went to all these galleries, I find it very, you know, like a closed scene. I was a bit, I felt myself shrinking, you know, and I thought, okay, I just look around, and then So it didn't feel very. Yeah, it feels like you have to have a very, you have to be very secure and very loud, big mouth, maybe. I know, I'm not sure, but I get the feeling that it's a little bit like that there, maybe.
Right.
And when I was in Tokyo, it felt completely different, because then I felt it was more, it's more my kind of way, you know, to not have the biggest mouth and just be, you know, who you are, and more, I don't know. I felt more at ease, you know, in Tokyo. And then I had this nice contact there with a gallery owner, and that went all just the same, like, you know, I was used to in Europe. I have good experiences with the galleries I work. So I don't know.
Right. And in New York, do you think that was more that kind of, you know, who's got the loudest voice, is that more to do with the contemporary art world rather than the kind of figurative world, or did you know?
I don't know. Maybe it was my own you know, being feeling small in this
big city. Yeah.
Not big city, but great. You know, there was so much to see and so much great art. And
okay.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a clear and an objective view, and I can't say too much about it, but that's how I felt it.
Okay. And you were on a trip to Borneo and Malaysia in 2007 with seven other Dutch artists. Did that trip influence your work much?
Only maybe that I got more into the wanting to paint more of landscape or surroundings of, you know, there was some, you know, the rainforest was so that was so great to see all this nature and blah blah blah. So maybe I got more into the vegetation surrounding of, you know, I used in my painting, but and that was kind of the seed of that, you know, what I used later in my paintings.
Yeah, right.
But that is maybe the only thing, really. You know, it was a great journey. It was really special. But you know, everything has its influences a bit, you know. I also did a trip to Tokyo once, and that also some impact on my work, maybe more than that journey. But it's always, you know, it's not that clear, but it's just shines through a little bit, you know, and then it's maybe later on it will be more clear that it's had an influence.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the whole life, really, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, that's it. You know, yeah, everything has its ways of getting into the painting. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. When you think about all your paintings back through, was there one that was particularly moving for you to make? Is there one that's going to stand out for you?
Well, for me, emotionally, they are all quite the same. So, but then apart from that, so I look at them as a painter or as, and I see that one is working better than the other.
Yeah, know? Right. Yeah.
They're not, of course, I see that they're not. But the funny thing is that's what I like about it. I know I find sometimes one painting a little, you know, less working or not as good maybe as another. But then there will be people that found that one is the most interesting. So I think, well, you know, it's not that I think, okay, I'll have to keep that one. It's good enough, you know, for they can't all be up there, you know. There has to
yes.
be. Of course, when I really don't think it's good enough, then it's just not finished. But I think the weaker ones are supposed to be there to, also because emotionally they are close to me as much as the other ones, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe there are a few paintings that I think stay moving to me. There are a few, you know, because I think they're all quite moving and personal when I make them in a way, and
yeah.
But there are a few that seem to keep seem to stand out, you know, after years, and I still get this, yeah, they still move me in a way, and I think these are the ones that combine the most difficult personal things I put in the painting, you know, the most most difficult things I struggle with in life, and combined with the technique, really, so that these are the best paintings, and also combined with the most personal and difficult struggles that I put in there. So
yeah. So what are the names of some of those ones that you just were talking about?
Maybe one of the first is one of the Silent Girls. There's this portrait of me with this kind of mask on my head and another one on top of it. I think it's Silent Girl 1, but there are three of them, so I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think it's one. And last year I did a painting called Beware the Jabberwock, and there are two of them, but the ones with the horses.
Yeah.
And there is a painting from, I think, 2007, and it's a big painting of a family on a table, and there are some kind of two kid-like figures at a table. It's chapter 7, I think. And there's this person with a moustache on the left and two kids on the table, and there's a mother standing next to it. It's a very empty painting.
Yeah.
I think that one is very is also one of them. So.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, they're all great. We're talking about children and innocence and all that sort of stuff earlier on. Did having children yourself, did that influence your work, do you think?
Not so much. You know, not in a sense of, no, not really. But of course, as everything in life, it influences the paintings. But not really, you know. It's not like I'm going to do it completely different or whatever. And then I didn't, you know, as an artist, I didn't feel different, you know.
Yeah.
As a person, yes, but not as an artist. And now I have to say that they are, I do think my kids are very inspiring. The things they make and they do are very inspiring. So a lot of that goes into the paintings now, you know, literally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes I see they do something with on paper, you know, with a sticker or something. You call that sticker in English?
Yeah.
And then I think, oh, that is great. And I just sneak it into my studio and just put it in a painting. You know, I just paint it. I just use it. But it didn't really change me. No, as an artist. No.
All right. Have you been approached to do teaching at all?
Not much. When I was very young, I did some, and I did a lecture last year or something. But no, I don't know. Not in a very professional way. Anyway, you know.
Yeah.
No, I'm not sure if I'm good at it. Because I never tried, of course, but it's not that I don't want to.
Oh, okay. You see, you just don't know whether you're good at it, or
you're
not saying, yeah, I've tried it and I'm not great at it.
Oh, no. Yeah, no, I don't have experience in it much, so I don't know.
Do you, the reason I'm asking you, like when you look at, when you think about, I would say when you're looking at your own kids, if one of them wanted to be an artist or, you know, young artists now starting out, it's a very different kind of to the world that you started out in. Do you think it's easier or like?
I don't think it's easy anyway, maybe. Do you think it's easier now or not?
Well, I don't know. On the one hand, you've got the internet and you've got all the social media, and there's a lot more art available to see. Mm-hmm. But then I suppose every generation is faced with the how are they going to move everything forward question. So in a way, that's the same. It's not nothing new in that. What can we do that's different, or not different for its own sake, but just how can we progress the conversation, I suppose, is a better way of putting it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's, of course, I had the first years when I worked, there was no internet at all. So I think it's a great help to have the internet.
Yeah.
To have contact with all over the world. And it's so much more easy to, you know, to get out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so much easier to make contact with so many people. Yeah, I think that's a big chance. I really have to learn to take that to my advantage.
Yeah. What's the biggest challenge you're facing at the moment as an artist?
There are two things. To find enough time to do what I want as an artist. But that's just practical. But what's always a struggle for me is to be really bold in a way, you know?
Yeah.
Not to be too careful. When I'm working, sometimes I think, I have to take this further, you know. This is too easy or too careful or too. I have to, and I look and I think, how can I be more bold? Yeah, that's something to be more brave or, you know, something like that.
Moving away from safety, really, isn't it?
Yeah. To leave a safe place, you know, and then doing something new, and then it's so, then you have to discover the whole thing again, you know. It's a struggle, you know, to think, okay, I have to do something. I had to get at an uncertain place where great things can happen, but that's also a struggle because then you have to find the whole thing. In Dutch, we say you have to moet opnieuw het wiel uitvinden. You have to start all over again. You know, that's a struggle for me to get out of the safe zone, and then, but not being there, then you don't know what to do. So that's difficult.
Yeah. Has that changed for you, or is it always the same? Just, you know, even though you go through, you change and evolve, but you're always on that line, that edge of uncertainty and uncomfortableness.
Yes. Well, I used to, 10 years ago, I could be, you know, on my way home on my bicycle from my studio to my house. And then I think, oh, I was really panicking then, you know. I thought, what? Oh, my God. What? You know, then I didn't know what to do. And now I know what's going to happen, you know. I don't know what to do. And I just think, okay, you get more secure about knowing you will find a solution. And if not, then there will be another solution. So, yeah, I get it's less stressful overall, you know, in the whole, it's less stressful.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Okay. This is my last question. I ask this to everyone who comes on the podcast. If there was one thing you could pass on to future generations, what do you think it would be?
I knew you were going to ask this because I listened in one of your thing, and I thought about it now, but I really don't know what to say. You know, I feel it's so out of the. It's not my thing to say anything, you know. I'm not the one to tell anyone. I think all the art and all the songs and all the everything, there's already left behind so much for them, you know, to use. Yeah, it really feels awkward for me to say anything about this.
Okay.
If you were a Dutch interviewer, I would know a song I would give them to them or let them listen to it. So I wouldn't have to say anything, but it's Dutch. So,
well, what's the name of the song? And people can look it up. Anyone who's listening can have a listen.
It's called Kom Terug from Spinvis.
Okay.
It's really good.
All right. Well, I'll see if I can find it and put a link.
Okay.
Make it a bit interactive. Very good.
Okay,
so you have a website. I think it's just your name, isn't it? Tamara Muller. Is it .com? Oh, you've got both, haven't you? You've got .com and
.nl.
NL, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And you're on Facebook, but you're not on Instagram. Is that right?
Yeah, but I hope I will be in the near future. So.
Okay, so I can look out for you on Instagram.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll put a link to all that in the show notes anyway.
Okay, great.
Okay, well, it's been lovely chatting with you and getting to know you a little bit. I think your work is really good, and I enjoyed spending time with it and going through it. As I say, it has that openness in it and that friendly quality. I think it's very interesting. It's the sort of paintings that make me come back again and again and keep looking and seeing different things. And that economy thing is, I find that very impressive in artists that are good at it, and you're very good at it, of just leaving it. It's the sort of thing that they make so much sense in hindsight. When I look at them, I go, well, of course you wouldn't paint that leg any more than Tamara's painted it. That's perfect. She's just done it exactly right. But I know, being on the other side of it, how difficult it is to know when to stop applying the paint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's very masterful, and really appreciated. And as I say, they keep giving the more I look at them. So yeah, it's brilliant and well done.
Well, thank you. I find it difficult to talk in English about all this.
Yeah.
I have to think about every sentence, and I just can't speak really freely, so that it's difficult. But it's really nice to hear somebody who's, you know, when you work alone in your studio, you don't know if it's coming across or it's so nice to hear somebody put it into words and understanding or seeing what I aim for. And yeah. The one thing I didn't say in the interview yet is that what maybe helped me was also that I didn't. It also didn't help me, but it helped me in a way that I, of course, I didn't have I had some painting lessons at the academy, but I never had years of painting lessons from teachers who told me how to do it. So that gave me maybe a kind of freedom or kind of room to find my own way.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That's might have been important too, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that because, you know, I know you were in art college and doing, you know, I just kind of assumed that you'd gone through that kind of training. So that's good to know, actually.
Yeah, no, I had graphic design and we did have some drawing lesson and some painting lesson, but just once a week or so. And
okay.
Yeah, that gives you also enormous freedom, of course, when you just don't hear someone saying you should do it like this or what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have that, so.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, good. Okay, well, as I say, it's been lovely chatting with you. I'm sure we'll keep in touch, but we'll say goodbye for now.
Yes, well, thank you very much, and goodbye.
Okay, you're welcome. All right, bye-bye then.
Bye.
Remember to go to the Gently Does It Patreon page. Go to patreon.com/JohnDaltonGentlyDoesIt and join the conversation.
I've never felt this good in my entire life. Make me some spaghetti. We are the Argyle Pimps. So buy us a drink. We're better than you thought, but not as good as we think. We are the Argyle.